Hummel versus Richard, Virginia B. Tyson, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Appellant's Counsel, Gary M. Bowman, Appellee's Counsel.
All right, now I'm directing the clerk not to start the clock. Mr. Bowman, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, do you have problems with connecting with your laptop or whatever?
I did earlier this morning, Your Honor. So far, I haven't had a problem since then, but you know how Murphy's Law is, it may disconnect while we're arguing.
Well, we'll hope for the best. All right, Ms. Tyson, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Virginia Tyson for the Commonwealth, the appellant. If I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The Court of Appeals erred in this case. In this drug conspiracy case, the trial court did not abuse its discretion in declining to give the single buyer-seller exception to conspiracy instruction. While the instructions were not an incorrect statement of the law generally, they were not applicable to the facts in this case. There was not more than a scintilla of evidence to support them. And actually, they could have misled or confused the jury as they discussed or addressed a single buyer-seller relationship. The conspiracy here was between two would-be sellers of methamphetamine who were going to trade that drug for a car. This was a complex agreement. There were contingent plans for financing and escape in the plan. Each conspirator had his or her own task as part of the conspiracy. And so this instruction with regard to the single buyer-seller relationship exception to drug conspiracies was simply not applicable. And we would ask this court to reverse the Court of Appeals ruling that the trial court erred in finding that this was error and reinstate the judgment of the Floyd County Circuit Court. The issue before the court today is not sufficiency of the evidence. That issue was settled by the Court of Appeals and not appealed to this court. Rather, the issue is, was there more than a scintilla of evidence to support an instruction that advised that a single buyer-seller relationship standing alone would not support a conspiracy instruction and, conviction. And also the other instruction which set forth what was necessary to support a conspiracy instruction where you have the single buyer-seller relationship. The evidence in this case was so different from that instruction. What we had, the evidence that was before the jury, much of it from Richard herself, was that there was a financing aspect to this purported sale. It was never going to be a sale because there was a detective who was the purported seller. But Harris, Matthew Harris, the other conspirator in this case, made lots of arrangements. That's clear through the joint appendix that he had a number of text messages with Detective Wade, Mike from Willis, as he knew him, and that Richard, at least on June the 15th, the day of the purported sale, saw these text messages. Ultimately, Richard wanted the car. And Richard drove the car, a car, not the one they were buying. Richard drove a car. Richard carried the methamphetamine on her person. Richard carried $250 with her. And that was going to be used in one of two ways. Either she was going to pay Harris, her co-conspirator, who had fronted her the drugs, to begin paying him back, because until she paid him back, he was going to be a half owner of the car, or she was going to use that $250 to put on top of the methamphetamine if the purported seller needed more than just the drugs for the car. So as you can see, there are a lot of moving parts to this conspiracy. And what's important about that is that there was pre-concert and connivance, and that's what a conspiracy is. And there was also an escape plan, which interestingly on Joint Appendix 317, Richard volunteers this. She's being cross-examined by the prosecutor about the detailed plan. Much of the time she agrees and says, okay, but she volunteered that there was this escape provision, that if things went badly, she was to leave and come back and pick Harris up again. And again, the reason that these things are so important, the facts of this case are important when we're not talking about sufficiency of the evidence, is because it simply shows the preconcert and connivance, and that's the only evidence that was before the jury. The single buyer seller exception really exists because otherwise every sale of illegal narcotics is also a conspiracy. Now this court in Heacock and the Court of Appeals in a number of cases have addressed how it can't be a conspiracy because really the parties aren't conspiring to commit exactly the same offense. But this is just not where we are in this case. Now, there are two cases that both sides have relied upon or cited and distinguished as far as the Commonwealth is concerned, Edwards and Fegley, where you have two parties on one side, either two buyers or two sellers. But this case is very much unlike Fegley, which involved the two sellers, because the problem in the Fegley case, as we argued on our brief, was that there was no evidence of this pre-concert, this connivance ahead of time. And that's all the evidence was in this case. And again, much of it from Richard herself. This is not a situation where the jury could find that we had aiding and abetting. This was not countenancing or helping a principal. Richard was a partner in this venture. And the venture was to sell methamphetamine in exchange for a car that one day would belong to her. In the meantime, would belong to both she and her co-conspirator. So here we have the pre-planning, the division of labor that are the hallmarks of a conspiracy. And that is all that was before the jury. Now, in its opinion in the court below, the Court of Appeals noted that whether there was more than a scintilla of evidence to support this instruction depended on the credibility of the evidence. And while that is true, the opinion does not recite any evidence that was before the jury that would support this instruction for the single buyer seller exception to conspiracy.
So was there any proffer of evidence that says, actually, we didn't talk about it ahead of time, we didn't plan it ahead of time, we didn't divide up the tasks ahead of time, we didn't agree on an escape plan, we didn't agree on the details? Was there any contest over the credibility of those things between one witness and another?
Your Honor, there was not. The evidence was that although this conspiracy may have been formed on the day that the offense was to take place, it was the only evidence before the jury. Again, much of it from Richard herself, was that they had these plans in place, both the financing plan and with its alternatives and the escape plan. And so that was the only evidence that was before the jury. There was simply not even a scintilla of evidence that this was not a pre-planned conspiracy between these two parties with its moving parts and its complexities. And so the trial court did not abuse its discretion in declining to instruct the jury to give these two instructions that were proffered by the defense that dealt with the single buyer seller exception to the drug conspiracy law. And because the trial court did not err, the Court of Appeals was incorrect in finding an abuse of discretion, in finding that there was more than a scintilla of evidence to support it. And because of that, we ask this court to reverse that adverse ruling to the Commonwealth and reinstate the circuit court's judgment. And of course, I would be happy to answer more questions from the court. Otherwise, I would like to reserve the remaining time that I have for rebuttal.
Any questions? You have 6 minutes and 22 seconds left. All right, Mr. Bowman.
May it please the court. My name is Gary Bowman. I'm in Roanoke. I'd like to highlight three topics. These three topics are addressed in the appellee's brief. First thing I'd like to talk about is that the only jury instruction that was given did not clearly state the applicable law. because it was an incomplete and therefore inaccurate description of the law of conspiracy applicable to a single drug sale. Second thing I want to talk about is the facts, just briefly. And the third topic I want to highlight is that there was more than a scintilla of evidence that supported giving complete instructions on the law of conspiracy. As the Commonwealth already acknowledged, the law is that a buyer-seller relationship standing alone is not a conspiracy. But the only jury instruction that the trial court gave in this case on conspiracy was that the jury shall find the defendant guilty of conspiracy if the Commonwealth proves three elements. One, that the defendant entered into an agreement with one or more persons. Two, that the agreement was that they were to commit distribution of a Schedule II drug. And three, that both the defendant and at least one other party to the agreement intended to commit distribution of a Schedule II drug. Regarding a drug sale, a single drug sale, because it does not instruct the jury that a single drug sale itself is not a conspiracy. Indeed, the one instruction that the trial court gave would require the jury to find the defendant guilty of conspiracy, even if they found a single drug sale. So this was an incomplete description of the law regarding a single drug sale and a conspiracy charge.
Was that, counsel, was that a model jury instruction on conspiracy?
Yes, sir. And there's nothing wrong with the instruction that the trial court gave. It's just that it was an incomplete instruction.
If you define the elements of conspiracy to include, among other things, an agreement prior to the act, as opposed to simply doing the act, doesn't that preclude the individual sale concept conceptually? Where you just show up and you hand it over and the money comes over, the two of you do it. There's no agreement at all, it just happens.
Yes, sir, that's right. And that itself, well, I mean, the law, to be clear, the law describing the buyer-seller exception to conspiracy liability contemplates that the agreement, that there's an agreement between the seller to sell and the buyer to buy the drugs, right? That is an agreement, okay, and that's accepted from conspiracy liability, okay, and that piece, the buyer-seller exception, the jury wasn't instructed on that in this case, and that should have modified this or should have supplemented the model instruction that the jury was given. I mean, there's a model jury instruction on the buyer-seller exception also, and that's the buyer-seller instruction that we offered at trial that was refused. Additionally, we requested that the court give an instruction that said, quote, a single buyer-seller relationship may constitute a conspiracy only if, one, the seller knows the buyer's intended use, and two, that by the sale, the seller intends to further promote and cooperate in the venture. End quote. Those are correct statements of law as well. So those three instructions.
Then with this question, given Harris's own testimony or the evidence of her earlier statements, what is the evidence that a rational fact finder could seize upon to say, look, there was no pre-concert agreement, there was no pre-planning, there was no division of labor, there was no escape plan, there was no financing deal, there was no explanation of how we're going to pull this off. Where is the evidence of that? Because I looked at the Court of Appeals opinion and I couldn't find it.
Yes, sir. And the Court of Appeal, the Court of Appeals could have written in their opinion, and here was what the scintilla of evidence was. I mean, the Court of Appeals did not do that. Maybe they should have, but I didn't, of course.
It's got to be, of course, more than a scintilla. So tell us, what was more than a scintilla?
Okay. There are several examples of what's more than a scintilla. I would like to recite those as part two of my answer. The first part of this, though, is that this court does not need to get into that scintilla of more than a scintilla of evidence analysis, because the instructions that were given misled the jury regardless of whether there was more than a scintilla of evidence that something else other than the drug sale itself was a conspiracy. The instruction that was given would or could have misled, I think did mislead, the jury into believing that the drug sale itself constituted a conspiracy. And the jury felt constrained to find her guilty of the conspiracy because it found her guilty of the drug possession. That's not the way it's supposed to work. There's supposed to be a buyer seller exception to conspiracy liability that would have caused the jury to not find her guilty of the conspiracy based on the drug sale itself. They would have had to have found more than a scintilla of evidence to find her guilty of conspiracy, and they should have been instructed on that. Now, as to answer
counsel,
what you're, I think,
right, counsel, this is Justice Goodwin. You said as a buyer seller exception concerning conspiracy, who are the buyer and seller in this particular instance who are accepted from being together in a conspiracy?
There are a number of relationships in this case that could be characterized as the conspiracy. Okay, one of the relationships is the relationship between Richard, who's the defendant here, and the undercover agent, Wade. Okay, because Wade was supposedly giving up his car, and Richard was conveying in consideration for that car Harris's drugs. Okay,
that,
so
that wasn't the theory of the case. The theory of the case was a conspiracy was between Harris and Richard.
Your Honor, the theory of the case is that's what the Commonwealth is characterizing it here today. Okay, the theory of the case was we don't know what the jury thought the conspiracy was. In fact, the trial court characterized the conspiracy one way when it, outside the presence of the jury, explained its reason for denying the buyer-seller exception. And then the Commonwealth argued the conspiracy in a different way when it argued the conspiracy in its closing argument. Okay, so we don't know what the jury thought the conspiracy was. Okay, but the jury.
What were those two ways, counsel? What were those two ways, briefly?
Okay, well, yes, ma'am. And I do need to get back to Justice Kelsey's question about what was the more than the scintilla of evidence. But the two ways were that the court characterized the evidence as being the way the Commonwealth characterized the evidence here today. But of course, that was outside the presence of the jury. And then the prosecutor in his closing argument characterized the evidence as Harris and Richard were joint sellers selling to Wade. Okay, well, that way that the prosecutor characterized it in closing argument, that would be the type of drug sale that would be subject to the buyer-seller exception. And of course, the jury, given these instructions, went out, came back. We don't know what happened in the jury room or the way that they thought the conspiracy was, what the conspiracy was, but they should have been given complete instructions. Now, getting back to Justice Kelsey's question on what is more than a scintilla of the evidence. Okay, in Justice Kelsey asked a question to the Commonwealth in her argument, and he used the words ahead of time, that the conspiracy had to occur ahead of time. This conspiracy occurred ahead of time. Okay, and the Commonwealth today has described it has to be a pre-arrangement. Okay, what happened here was that Harris, the man with the drugs, he had arranged all this with the undercover cop the day before, several days before he ever met Richard. Okay, then he was from Floyd. Then he drove down to Roanoke and met Richard on June 15th, the day that this occurred. They smoked some of the dope that he had. Okay, and then he said, hey, this guy who is the undercover cop has a car. And she says, great, I want a car, so I'll go with you. Then they hop in the car and drive 30 minutes to Check, Virginia, which is right over the Floyd County line from Roanoke. Okay, so the most time that elapsed prior to this going down was about 30 minutes. Okay, now the question is that, Justice Kelsey's words, ahead of time? Is that, in the Commonwealth's argument here today, a pre-arrangement or a jury question as to whether this basically is just going down all at the same time or whether this is a pre-arrangement to constitute a conspiracy? Justice Humphreys, when he wrote the opinion for the Court of Appeals, he characterized this as could be spontaneous. He didn't say it was spontaneous. And of course, the jury, you know, if we retried the case or tried the case in this case with the right if we tried the case with the right instructions, the jury could find that it wasn't spontaneous. Okay, but
at
maybe
best, counsel, at best, you've told us it was 30 minutes. How do we now, what is the evidence of spontaneity?
Well, that's 30 minutes. I mean, and so you had a jury sitting in Floyd County, and we were all talking about going from Roanoke to Check. Okay, there's only one road from Roanoke to Floyd, which is 221, and pretty everybody in the courtroom knew where Check was because that's on the road from Roanoke to Floyd. Okay, I don't think it says in the transcript it was 30 minutes. Okay, but there's plenty of evidence about Roanoke and Check, and that's where they drove to, as they drove from Roanoke to Check. So it was a short period of time. Okay, another aspect of this is that the jury could have
Can I stop you for a second? This is Justice Goodwin. How can that be evidence of anything other than agreement? I'm sorry. How could the fact that they decided to drive 30 minutes together to Check to sell these drugs be anything other than an agreement?
The agreement to sell the drugs had already been made by Harris. Okay, Richard jumped on this bandwagon and said, I'll go with you.
Can I stop you, Mr. Bowman? Because I'm talking about the agreement, not between the buyer and the seller, but the agreement between Richards and Harris. And then the fact that they're both in a car together going to sell drugs show that there is an agreement between them, or is evidence that there is an agreement between them that they're going to go sell some drugs.
Yes, sir. I concede it is an agreement. Okay. The question is it a pre-connivance, or is it an agreement ahead of time, or is it simply the commission of a crime? I mean,
Let me ask you something. When they did this, they got in the car. Had they sold the drugs already?
No, sir.
Then it was ahead of time.
I would argue, Your Honor, respectfully, that this is a jury question. And it's up to the jury to decide the temporal element of what pre-connivance or pre-agreement is. Okay, another aspect of this that's a jury question is whether, since Harris had already agreed with the undercover policeman to do all of the things that were going to occur, other than even including this, driving to Floyd. And Richard just jumped on this bandwagon after this drug sale had already been set up between the undercover policeman and Harris. The jury could have found, as the Court of Appeals held in this Feigley case, where it held that the evidence wasn't sufficient to support a conspiracy, the jury could have found that Richard simply facilitated or helped or aided and abetted Harris in the commission of the crime that he'd already arranged, rather than conspired with him. Another part of this that has to be a conspiracy is that there has to be a stake in the venture. Going back to the Court of Appeals decision in Zuniga, which is the bedrock case in this little branch of the law. In the Zuniga case, Zuniga followed the U.S. Supreme Court's analysis of what a conspiracy is in the direct sales case. And in the direct sales case, the U.S. Supreme Court said that a conspiracy has to involve a continuing relationship or a continuing sale on. This was simply a one-off transaction. This was not a conspiracy in that sense, in the sense that that would exclude a conspiracy. Like in direct sales, this was not a conspiracy because this was simply a one-off transaction. So in sum, the jury could have found that there was more than a scintilla of evidence because the temporal element that was involved wasn't sufficient to constitute pre-arrangement or pre-connivance. Okay, it could have found that that Richard was simply helping out Harris in doing what he and the undercover policeman had already agreed to do, and it was aiding and abetting, rather than conspiracy. And the third thing is that
Counsel, this is Justice Goodwin again. If what you say is correct, what does that have to do with the exception? That just has to do with the sufficiency of the evidence to prove conspiracy.
Your Honor, the issue here is, as I argued before, okay, the buyer-seller exception should have been given regardless of whether there was more than a scintilla of evidence. Okay, if there was, a jury could have found that there was more than a scintilla of evidence for the reasons that I just said. But the court
can I stop you 1 second, counsel? Because it seems like we've gotten off on a wrong track. Because I think what the justice who was asking the question was a scintilla of evidence which supports the instruction, not a scintilla of evidence concerning whether the crime occurred. That's where I think you've kind of gotten off track. You're giving us scintilla of evidence concerning maybe there was not a conspiracy, but that's not what we're asking for. We're talking about a conspiracy of evidence which would support given the instruction which you asked for and didn't get.
Your Honor, I'm happy to answer the question, but I am in overtime.
No, go ahead and answer the question.
Yes, sir. The first argument that I'm making is that we don't know what the jury found. Okay, when you say we're off track because we're putting ourselves in the mind of the jury and saying that the jury found that the conspiracy was a conspiracy between Richard and Harris, rather than conspiracy between Richard and the undercover policeman. We don't know that. That therefore, regardless of the scintilla of the evidence analysis, the court should have given the buyer-seller instruction. Okay. The jury, though, it's true. The jury could have found that there was not. The temporal element of this that was adequate for a conspiracy, that she was not just aiding and abetting Harris, that she conspired with him. A jury could have found that, but a jury could also not have found that. The jury could also have found that the temporal element was too short, even though you may disagree, the jury could have found that. The jury could have found that she was simply aiding and abetting him, even though, you may disagree, the jury could have found that. And the jury could have found that there was no evidence that there was a continuing relationship or that the undercover policeman was going to sell this on and was involved in anything other than a personal amount of drug, a one-off transaction. And so, therefore, there was a scintilla of evidence from which a jury could have found that this wasn't a conspiracy.
All right.
Thank you.
That's a good one. Are you finished?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Now, Ms. Tyson, you have enough time left to argue six cases. Six minutes, 22 seconds. It's your time.
I just want to make three very quick points to Mr. Bowman's argument.
6 minutes and 22 seconds. Use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the indictment is an indictment for conspiracy to distribute a controlled substance. The instruction instructs the jury that the agreement was that they were to commit distribution of the Schedule II controlled substance. So that's what was before the jury, was the conspiracy to distribute this drug. And the only evidence that was before the jury was that this was a very detailed, complex agreement that involved financing, escape, carrying the drugs from one city to another. And there was not more than a scintilla of evidence to support the instructions. The trial court did not err, and we would ask this court to reinstate the judgment of the Floyd County Circuit Court. Thank you.
All right, 5 minutes, 22 seconds left. Is that available for me just to give it to anybody who needs it?
Your Honor, I yield my time.
All right, well, the time is up for this argument.